What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breininger, inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Linda Wertheimer, and this is On Point. Single men have the bachelor pad, but what about the bachelorette pad? Twice as many single women are now buying homes as are single men. For these women, no more stepping over a roommate's or a partner's piles of dirty laundry. Living alone isn't always fun or financially accessible for all. Women still struggle against a gender wage gap. Some say living alone leads to isolation or loneliness, but living solo apparently also brings empowerment and refuge to many women, shifting age-old norms of what the American household looks like. This hour on Point, single ladies find sanctuary in living alone. You can join us on air or online. Are you a woman living alone? What's your story? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now is Ashley Fetter. She's staff writer for The Atlantic. She wrote the piece, Living Alone and Liking It, for the real estate news website Curbed. You can link to her story at our website, onpointradio.org. Ashley, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Linda. Thanks for having me.
So tell me, give me the facts. I mean, how do we know that more women are actually living alone?
Sure. So data from 2015 shows us that more than a quarter of households were single-person households back then. And then in urban areas like New York City, that figure's something more like half. And today we're finding, you know, from studies like the one that came out, that like these studies that come out of the Harvard Joint Housing Center, say that women head 54% of all single-person households now.
And when we talk about a single person, what are we talking about? Do they make distinctions between people who are widowed, people who are divorced, or people who are just never wanted to marry? I mean, how do you identify that?
That's an interesting question. So for most of these demographic studies, just showing which, you know, how many people live alone, it is not. That's not made a distinction. It's just, you know, how many households consist of one person is kind of the baseline question. I think certain other studies sort of look further into the attitudes and how people ended up living alone. But most of the more widespread data only works with whether people live alone or not.
Are you counted as living alone if you're living alone with a child?
No.
Okay, so
no, that's not a single person.
Do household. Not count children. Children count. Dogs don't, I guess.
Dogs do not count. That's right. Human people in a household.
Okay, human people. So do we know anything about the age of these people? You know, one would assume, I would certainly assume, that there might be more older women living alone because there just simply will be more. There are more women who will outlive their husbands.
Yes, I think that's true. I think that's a major factor. One thing that's been identified in, you know, in the U.S. and also abroad in England is there's an epidemic of loneliness that people think is spurred by a lot of older elderly people living alone. As they're widowed or as they become less mobile, they live alone and they get out less. So it's certainly a factor. I think it's certainly something that is on the rise.
That
people who are living alone into older age. Yeah.
We could not ignore it. But, well, let's talk now to Michelle. She's in Oklahoma City about living alone.
Hi, Linda.
Hi.
I really relate to this topic a lot. I've been living by myself since I was 19 years old, and I'm in my 30s now. And it's something that I hold so sacred and so dear that even my long-term romantic relationships tend to sour at some point as my partner wants to see that eventually head to marriage. And I just can't see myself ever living with somebody. And I've it's been something that I've sought counseling over, thinking I must be irreparably broken in some way.
But no, so far so good.
I love it. I couldn't do it any other way.
Okay, well, let's go back to Ashley. What do you think? Is there something typical about Michelle? Is Michelle the wave?
Anecdotally, I think she might be part of a bigger thing. Yeah, I certainly identify with the caller. I have lived alone for most of my adult life and really found it empowering. I've really found a lot of joy in it. Creatively, I find I do my best work when I have my own space, when I have my own environment, and I'm kind of in control of all the conditions. Yeah, I certainly think there's something to it, something larger.
I thought it was interesting that she said that some of her gentlemen friends have been interested in moving in with her, and that's been a problem for her.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting. And you look at certain studies that will show you that as someone lives alone into adulthood, the further they get into adulthood living alone, the more likely they are to continue living alone. And I do think, anecdotally, just from my lived experience, it does seem like you would get used to having your own space and be less willing to give it up, like the caller said.
Joining us now from Washington is Diana Olick. She is a real estate reporter for CNBC and writes the Reality Check column on CNBC.com. Diana, welcome back to On Point. We had her, and we have apparently lost her, but we'll get her back. One of the things that we have been thinking about as we talk about women living alone is we've heard a number of women cite a famous example, famous and popular example, and we have a clip from the HBO show Sex in the City. That's a program in which all four main characters have their own place. They all live alone. You're going to hear Miranda Hobbs describe dealing with a skeptical male mortgage agent.
I'm telling you, if I was a single man, none of this would be happening.
If you were a single man, I'd date you.
I've got the money, I've got a great job, and I still get, it's just you.
No, they're threatened. Buying a place alone means you don't need a man.
I don't. Everyone needs a man. That's why I rent. If you own and he still rents, then the power structure is all off. It's emasculating. Men don't want a woman who's too self-sufficient.
I'm sorry, did someone just order a Victorian straight up?
So, Ashley, what do you think? Do you think that this is a changing thing, that women are able now to live alone? Well, this is one of the things that I've thought was fascinating from the information I've seen, that women do have problems getting loans. Women do have problems with mortgages. Women do make less money than men. And the women who can live alone are women who can afford it. So mm-hmm. Is this a class thing?
You know, I do think that's part of it. I don't think I don't think it's wise to gloss over the fact that living alone, especially in an urban area, is a real privilege. It is, something that people find that they have to be able to afford to do. I think that's certainly a part of it. There are certain, demographics of people that are going to be more able to live alone than others. I think you're right.
So you have to have enough money to live alone, and you have to have whatever the personal resources are to live alone and be content with that. What about, do you find that these women who are living alone, have you actually gone out and tried to talk to them?
Yeah, I talked to women alone. I talked to women living alone for the story I wrote. Yeah,
sure.
Several. And I did find that a few lived with their parents for a few years to save up to get a place of their own. I talked to one woman who, had lived alone while she saved up for a condo. I myself had a co-signer for my first lease alone. It was my parents. I a year later took over the lease myself. But at first, especially starting out, I needed help. Plenty of people do. It's certainly a realistic part of the deal of living alone, is that sometimes you will need financial help to do it.
Did you have any? And did you have any difficulty trying to explain to your parents what you wanted to do?
You know, not really. I had kind of had a certain situation where I had talked about living with someone out of college, and then she took a job in a different city, and just kind of, you know, our plans changed right before I had to be in a new city for a job. And so my parents kind of, you know, were understanding. They were helpful to help me find a place that was my own. And my mom walked into the lease office with me and said, you know, I'll help you in whatever way you need this first year.
This first year.
This first year.
Do you think
yeah.
she was expecting something to happen that, like, my son-in-law might walk in the door at some point?
Oh, well, I don't think that was the case. I think she was more thinking along the lines of that first year that I was living alone. I had only kind of a fellowship. It was a year-long kind of a contract job, and I think she was looking for something more permanent by the end of the year, which did come through.
In Hampton Roads, Virginia, we've got a call from Carol, who's a question. Carol, are you there?
Oh, yes. Yes. Hi, Linda. How are
Hi.
You?
Hi. You have lived alone for a while?
25 years.
Uh-huh.
And I've owned my home for 21. And I was fortunate that I didn't have any issues with getting a loan or mortgage. But, and, you know, I do enjoy my time alone. But I guess my question is, do we find that social or societal views of women living alone have changed?
So what do you think? Ashley Fetters?
I certainly do. There's a certain, you know, point within the 20th century in America that you can point to where women living alone were viewed very skeptically. I think it was the post-war years when women were kind of headed back into the kitchens and back into the laundry rooms and back, you know, into these like parenting and housekeeping roles that women living alone were just kind of seen as, what are you doing? Are you really happy like this? Is this really what you want? This instead of, you know, having a house full of children and pets. And, you know, nowadays you will find, you know, like we were saying, Sex and the City was a show where four women who lived in the city all lived alone. And that was treated as something of a feature of their existence and not something that was unusual about them.
Ashley, stay with us. We're discussing the rising number of female home buyers and women's experiences living solo. You can join the conversation. Does living solo make you feel empowered, or do you struggle with loneliness? I'm Linda Wertheimer, and this is On Point.
Planet Money tip number 17. Sometimes life is exactly like the movies.
T-minus 30 seconds.
They said T-minus. They said T-minus.
Planet Money, a podcast about the economy and sometimes about rocket ships.
This is On Point. I'm Linda Wertheimer. We're discussing the high rates of home buyers today who are single women. Who are the women at the head of those single households? You can join the conversation. Are you a single home buyer? If not, what obstacles stand in your way? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Ashley Fetters is here with us from The Atlantic, and we're joined now by Diana Olick. She is a real estate reporter for CNBC. She writes the Realty Check column on CNBC, CNBC.com. Diana, welcome back to On Point.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Linda.
So the business of women buying houses, is it or buying apartments? Are they more likely to buy houses or apartments or what?
They're likely to buy both, and it probably depends on what age group they're in. I've been talking to a lot of downsizing baby boomer women who are buying single-family homes, and they're doing that because they've always lived in a home. Perhaps, you know, they're obviously empty nesters. Perhaps their spouse has died or they're divorced, and they simply like the idea of living in a home, and they're confident about that. If you're a younger single woman, you are more likely to buy a condo in a building, and a lot of that has to do simply with safety, feeling that there are others around, that you're a young woman who doesn't want to be in a home alone, but definitely more women, young women and older women buying homes.
So buying being the operative word, you have to have the money.
Yes.
We were just discussing this. Is this something that, is this a kind of a class thing? Are women have to be able to afford to do this?
Absolutely. And more women are. If you look at the demographics are changing, you see more women than men in college. You see more working women with college degrees and higher education degrees than men. So while we may not have, you know, equal pay, we are certainly coming up in the ranks of, you know, women earning very good salaries. And one thing, I don't want to bore you, but financing has gotten increasingly easy for women. I remember back in 1990-something, I'll tell you, when I bought my first home, and I was a single woman, and it didn't even occur to me to buy a home. I had had a job for 10 years already. I had a very good salary, and I was renting. And it was my father who said, why are you paying so much for rent when you could be building equity in a home? And it just never occurred to me. So we went for that mortgage process. And even though, again, I had a fine salary and I had a long-term history of good work, et cetera, they wanted my father to co-sign the loan with me. Simply because I was a single woman. That does not happen as much today anymore. It's a lot easier to get a mortgage being a woman if you have the financials to back it up.
What about, would that be more true in a city than it would be in a small town? Is there something regional about that?
I don't think so, because mortgage lending today is so national and there are so many outlets for you to do it, to go on different websites, whether, you know, I won't name any number because I'll get in trouble for singling out one over the other.
The ones but, you left
you
out.
Know, there are many, many websites, mortgage lenders that are national mortgage lending companies that you get on, you sign in, you put in an account, you put in all your financials, you document your work history and your savings, and, you know, you put in your tax forms like anyone else, and they're doing it as a math equation. They're not necessarily looking at you as male versus female.
So this all sounds like something out of Jane Austen. We generally believe that a young woman with a good income must be in want of a man. I mean, is that true? Do you think that that these women are thinking about this house of their own as a kind of an interim move?
I don't see it as necessarily interim. And you talked earlier in the show about what has to be single woman, not single woman with child. But if you look at the younger demographics, how people are getting married later, having children later, marriage and children are the two biggest drivers of home ownership. Now, single women may be looking at buying a home because they want to have that settled before they get married, before they have children. You have more women who are choosing to have children alone. You also have, you know, different kinds of relationships, people cohabitating and not marrying. And you might have a single woman on the mortgage document, and maybe a man moves in, maybe a woman moves in, maybe the woman has a child. It's all about setting up that foundation of home ownership, which many more women today feel like, why shouldn't I? If I can, you know, save money, if I can make money in a home as home prices go up, why should I pay these incredibly high rents when it might actually be cheaper in the long run to own?
Joining us now from Brooklyn, New York is Kathleen Gerson. She is a professor of sociology at New York University and the author of The Unfinished Revolution: Coming of Age in a New Era of Gender, Work, and Family. Kathleen, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Linda. It's nice to be here.
I have noticed that this is public radio, after all, and all book titles must have colons in them. You maybe did not know that. We have all sorts of female lifestyles that we're looking at on television these days, ranging from Little House on the Prairie reruns to this one. This is the pilot episode of the Fox show, The Mindy Project, about a spunky OBGYN who lives alone. Here, actress Mindy Kaling, that is the character, that she is the actress, but the character's name is also Mindy, she mulls over the possibility of staying alone forever.
Maybe I won't get married, you know? Maybe I'll do one of those eat, pray, love things. Ugh, no, I don't want to pray. Forget it. I'll just die alone.
So, ladies, there is a what I really want to know is, are we looking, do you think we're looking at this kind of arrangement of living alone as a transitional moment, or do you think we're looking at it as a trend? Let's go back to Ashley Fetters.
Well, that's an interesting question. I guess as can you rephrase?
The question is, if living alone and liking it is something that people are doing, do you think it's really a trend, or do you think they're just kind of hanging there and they're going to do something else soon?
Oh, I think women live alone for all kinds of reasons. Women live alone between relationships before they're ever in a relationship, after they've been in, you know, the relationship that's going to be, you know, their their love of their life relationship. Some people, you know, live alone at the end of their life. So I don't want to put a blanket women living are living alone because of X, Y, Z reason on it. But I do think, you know, you do see women living alone at younger ages more often because, you know, like we were saying earlier, they're delaying and deprioritizing marriage a little bit more. There's less emphasis on, you know, you finish college, get a job, get a husband. Now it's kind of you finish college and then you just sort of you finish your education. You figure out, you know, what you want to do from there. And it doesn't really have to come along with a family. So I think you will find in the, you know, among younger women, there's probably more of a trend toward, you know, living alone and then figuring it out, or living alone and doing it forever. I think it's probably both.
And what do you think? Let me ask Kathleen Gerson, what do you think?
Yes, my answer would be both. I think one thing to keep in mind is that one of the reasons that women are living alone at younger ages is because they're not sure about their future. What they do know is that they want to be independent, they want to have economic stability, regardless of whether or not they're in a relationship, and the future is uncertain. And so whatever that future may bring, they want to feel that they have prepared for whatever choices they want to make in the future. And the other major transition that's occurring is that people are moving in and out of very different kinds of family forms over the course of their lives. And so it's no longer this sort of lockstep movement from singlehood to marriage to children to retirement. Now we move around a lot, and women are part of that trend. And part of the reason that that trend is occurring is that women are now able to be economically and socially independent, to see their independence as a benefit rather than something to apologize for, and as a moment in their lives to enjoy and to hold on to whatever they may do down the line.
Mary Lou is calling in from Tonawanda, New York. Mary Lou?
Hi, Linda.
Hi.
I'm calling with perhaps a story of how much times have changed. I was divorced in 1970, and in 1972, I went to purchase a home having two young children. I was a school teacher locally, and I was never given even any consideration, but I was lucky to have a relative who worked for the bank. She went to the mortgage department to ask them why they would turn down a school teacher for a mortgage, and they said, well, she was a woman, and she might get pregnant and not be able to continue the mortgage. And at that point, the fact of the matter was I had had a hysterectomy. My relative informed them, and they said they would consider me if I got a note from my gynecologist that I had had a hysterectomy and couldn't bear children.
Unbelievable.
And I get a mortgage.
Wow.
I would add 2 points to that story. The
Who's
first
this?
This is Kathleen.
Okay.
The first is, I think, how easily we forget that there was a moment in American history not too long ago when women were not allowed to own property. And it's been a gradual but steady movement in the direction of not only may women own property, but they may own it alone, and they less and less have to prove that they have the ability to do so. The irony, of course, is that men are now facing uncertain economic circumstances where they cannot necessarily predict the future. And so in some ways, women are as safe a bet as men are. So that's the good news, and I think we should remember how far we've come. But the second thing I would add is that living alone does not require owning property. And I think we also need to remember that women of all classes and all economic circumstances are choosing to live alone, even if they're renting, even if their housing may not be what would be ideal. They still may prefer the independence that that gives them to the prospect of having to share with someone that they don't want to be with.
Diana Olick, let's bring you back in. Diana's covers real estate for CNBC. So, what is do you think women still come into the same kind of, you know, I had to have a note from my doctor kind of thing? No. Have you experienced that, or have you experienced what we were just hearing about from Kathleen, that that at this point men are beginning to have a hard time with mortgages, possibly because they don't have the double income that so many people, you know, which constitutes housing for so many people?
Well, I told you the story earlier about how when I bought my first home, I had to have my father co-sign on the loan, even though I had a very good salary. Well, I am married now nearly 20 years. I have two children. I still have a very good job. My husband is a school teacher. He teaches fourth grade in D.C. public schools. He does not have the salary I have. And when we were refinancing our mortgage recently to those rock-bottom rates, our lender said it would really be best to keep your husband off the mortgage, because you are a better candidate. So we've come a long way, baby. I'm not saying that's going to work for everyone, but it is absolutely the financials now. That's what banks are looking at. We've been through the foreclosure crisis. We've seen what's happened. They look at every item on that sheet: income, tax returns, background history, et cetera. Who is the better candidate? Man, woman, doesn't matter now if the numbers work. And I would also just add to, you know, the conversation you were having before. You know, we predicate this conversation today on statistics that are changing, that more women are buying homes than men right now. More women, single women, are buying homes. But let's remember, we are, in general, social animals. And we have the social generation coming up, you know, in large numbers. And we're seeing new trends in housing with multi-generational living, more people living together. So while, yes, more single women are able to buy homes, they are economically and socially independent more than ever before, we do tend to live together. And I don't really think that's going to change that much, even though we are seeing women able to buy that first home, or maybe able to buy a home when they're older and they're either divorced or downsized or whatever. We've also seen trends in older baby boomer women choosing to buy homes together or rent together, the Golden Girl syndrome, because people, again, do want to be together.
I think I mentioned yesterday to some of the people here that Susan Stamberg at National Public Radio has for years talked about the Shady Radio rest home, where all of the women of NPR repair at a certain age and all live together. So far, it hasn't happened, but it could happen. What do you think about the notion that that people are? I mean, you like the idea of people being happy living in groups. Kathleen, do you see people happy living alone?
Well, I was going to jump into that last conversation because one of the ways that the census collects information, they want to know who lives alone, but they also want to know who lives with other people that they are not related to, either by marriage or biology.
Who has roommates.
Exactly. And that absolutely is a trend that has occurred as well. It's the research on living alone versus living with others is very interesting. It turns out that people who live alone are more likely to be engaged outside the home in civic activities, whereas married couples, for example, especially with young children, are much less likely to have the time and the energy to maintain and create social bonds outside the home. So there's a little bit of a counterintuitive finding there, because we think of families as being the most connected and integrated. But basically, you're absolutely right. People are social animals, and whatever situation we live in, what matters is, do we have strong bonds with other people? Are we well cared for? Do we have others that we care for? And do we have enough economic support to be able to live well? And the research shows that it really doesn't matter whether you live alone or not. What matters are those other factors. And we need to move beyond focusing on people's marital status and their housing status, especially in terms of gender, where it's no longer the notion that a single woman, old days, we called women like that spinsters. Now we call them independent women. What matters is that people have rich social lives regardless of where they live or how they live. And that's what the research shows.
Kathleen Gerson. She is a professor of sociology at New York University. Thank you very much for being with us this morning.
My pleasure.
Diana Olick is a real estate reporter for CNBC, and thank you as well for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Ashley is going to stay with us, I hope. We're looking at shifting demographics, single women living solo, who has the emotional ability to go it alone, but also, maybe especially, the financial ability. After the break, we'll take a look at that. You can join the conversation. Does the math of living alone add up for you? Is college debt keeping you in a house with three roommates well into your 30s? I'm Linda Wertheimer, and you are listening to On Point.
This is Peter Sagal. When we began Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, we dreamed that our rude jokes would be, in the end, the appropriate way to talk about the news. And look, it happened. Listen to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Linda Wertheimer. We're taking a look at the joys and struggles of women living alone. You can join the conversation. What financial questions do you have about living solo? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Ashley Fetters, a staff writer for The Atlantic, is here with us. And joining us now from Bowie, Maryland, is Michelle Singletary, nationally syndicated personal finance columnist for The Washington Post. Michelle, great to have you back with us.
Oh, thank you. Good to be here.
Now, we are getting a lot of calls, and they're sending to us messages that are exactly what we ask for. Tell us about your life living alone. So let's take this very first one, Gail from Lakeland, Florida.
Hi, Linda. This is
Hi.
Gail, and I couldn't agree more with the statement that's been said twice now, that we are social animals. And I personally am 65. I've been married, divorced. I've lived with roommates. I've lived alone, which I'm doing now. I love living alone. But demographics are shifting, and we are an aging population. Most people have heard of the gray tsunami. As we get older, there's going to be fewer resources to take care of us. But this is important, especially for women, because women are living longer than men. And living alone is great until we get to a point, especially with age, when we're going to need a little help. Somebody mentioned earlier that when a spouse dies, everything changes. We may have been living in a single-family home for all these years, raising our families, and now we're alone. I think a lot of us also know that isolation is very dangerous, especially as we're aging.
So what's your solution?
One of the things, yeah, the solution could be co-housing. And somebody referred to that earlier, the Golden Girls. And,
right.
So what I'm looking at doing is creating, right here in Lakeland, Florida, a senior co-housing community. This is especially helpful for women. A co-housing community means that it's a custom adult village, and you have supportive, caring neighbors that live in close proximity.
So you're thinking not only that this would be a good idea, you're thinking of becoming a real estate entrepreneur and building it?
Well, it's an entrepreneur. I'm not a realtor, but I've got everybody that I know around me is helping to make this happen. I'm doing a lot of talks and presentations and and I'm learning from other co-housing communities. I just spent time in Washington State and Port Townsend, where they have a beautiful new senior co-housing community. It's state of the art. It's the place to be.
Okay, thanks very much. I'm also going to ask for Melissa, who is in Orange, Connecticut, and she's Melissa. How are you?
Hi, Linda. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
So my comment, I wanted to add and share my experience. I am a pretty strong advocate for women living alone at some point in their lives to whatever, I guess, level they can, whether it means, you know, a smaller apartment or a different neighborhood. I lived alone for 4 years in Boston. It was kind of a measure of success back then for my circle. And I lived alone until I met my husband, and then I was widowed at 38. I really feel that without having lived alone, I do have children, so I don't technically live alone now, but my children were quite little, and it did feel like living alone. I think that if I hadn't been on my own for those few years, that it would have been that much harder when it was time to actually deal with the change in my lifestyle and being a widow.
So you felt somehow living alone prepared you to take care of yourself?
Definitely. And the previous caller that was just mentioning about the, you know, the gray tsunami and women living longer, you know, in addition to the grief of being a widow and losing your spouse, having to just be by yourself and what that means, and taking care of whether it's the bills, the physical structure, whatever it is I would imagine is so overwhelming if you never have had to do it.
Uh-huh.
So
okay.
When I talk to younger women, I usually offer that experience. If you're finished with college or don't worry about marriage or any of that, really just take the opportunity to live by yourself for a while.
Especially if you've had to live in one of those college apartments or college dormitories, I would think living by yourself would feel pretty good. I'm going to go back to Michelle Singletary. Michelle, what do you think is driving this? Do you see this as a trend, and what's causing the trend, if it is one?
I think part of what's driving the trend is that women are getting married much later than we are used to historically. And so if you're going to be getting married in your 30s or mid-30s, you're thinking, well, if I can afford to buy a house, why don't I go ahead and do it now? I don't have to wait for a man. And also, you know, we're more educated, and so we've got more resources, getting better jobs. I mean, I've only rented 1 year of my entire adult life. I bought a home in my early 20s right out of college, about a year after college. And so I've been a homeowner, you know, really my whole life, you know, adult life. And I did love it. I think we just have to be cautious to just make it sound like if you're not buying or you're not living alone, somehow you're a failure. I think you need to look at wherever you are in your life and what makes the most sense for you economically. I'm a huge advocate for co-sharing or, you know, multi-generational housing or co-housing, because in many areas you can't afford to live on your own. And this idea that you have to do that to become an adult, and then you're struggling financially and not able to save and put money away for your retirement, I think does a disservice to everyone, particularly women.
So you'd say living alone, if you can afford it, might be exactly the right thing to do. But on the other hand, you have to think long term about what affording it means.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. I mean, you can learn to do all the things that you learn being alone. You can learn being in a house with others. You've got your own room. You've got your own space. You've got rules about what, you know, what you each are going to do. And so I'm just very cautious about this sort of, you know, this idea that if you don't own a home, you're some financial failure. And that's not true, because it puts pressure on people who are renting, and it makes them feel less than. If I hear another person say, well, you're wasting your money when you rent, I want to choke them. Okay, maybe not. I shouldn't be so violent. But, you know, but it sends the wrong message. Let's stop shaming people. Wherever you are, whatever makes sense. And I'm the financial person, so I'm going to say this. You got to make sure it makes financial sense. It was a financial choice for me to own so soon out of college. It was that or go live with my grandmother, who woke me up at 5 a.m. to get shoes underneath my bed. I'm not having that, right?
Right. I'm with you on that.
And it was a homeowners program for people just starting out. So the numbers worked for me, but it had not been, I would not have bought. And I lived alone for many years before I got married, almost a decade. And then I loved being married and sharing my space with my husband. And I was able to I bought a condo in Baltimore. My disabled brother could then live there. So it created a financial legacy for him. And so I love this conversation, because it's like, ladies, you know, do what's right for you. You don't have to wait for a man. It's so interesting you're talking about, you know, what kind of can block it. I have a lot of female friends who own homes who are meet guys who they're worried about buying a home that the guy won't want to move into their home, which is ridiculous. You need to kick him to the curb if he thinks like that. It's crazy.
Okay. So Ashley, what we're talking about here is the practicality, But what about the sort of, I don't know, social and emotional aspects of living of women living alone? I mean, I have some single friends who are who've seen every museum exhibit there is, and most of the plays that pass through our town, Washington. But I'm not, you know, I don't know that I would be that aggressive about about getting myself into all the things I ought to get myself into.
Sure. I mean, it goes to Michelle's point that living alone should not be seen as, you know, the right solution for everyone. And I think you can apply that on a social level as well. I know some people who live alone have found it to be isolating. And other people who live alone have found it to be, you know, a place of, you know, of where they finally find some privacy and finally find some peace and quiet. And I found personally when I first moved in alone that it made me more proactive about seeing the people that I wanted to see and spending my the hours of free time that I had on seeing the people that I wanted to see and not just people who were, you know, around in my dorm room or around in my apartment when I had roommates. So I certainly think there are some people who take it as a kick in the pants to be proactive about their social life.
Now we have someone on the line who is making money out of living alone, and that is Rita. She's in Little Compton, Rhode Island. Hello, Rita.
Hi, Linda. Thanks for taking my call. I love your work and your voice.
Thank you.
I do. I Airbnb several of my bedrooms and bathrooms. I've lived alone for the last couple of years. My young adult children finished college and moved off. I retired, and I thought, what am I going to do with this lovely space? I live near the ocean, and I started Airbnb-ing, and I have met the most wonderful people. They call me and ask if they can come back. They've invited me. I've been invited to guest homes in France and Germany, and it's been a wonderful experience. I absolutely love it, and it helps me pay the bills.
So living alone is has given you a sort of a new way of life.
It absolutely has. The space is lovely, so people like to come. And then when they come, I make them feel important and special. They're my guests, and they become like family sometimes. So it's been a wonderful experience, really a great social engagement. I get to share my community with them and let them know what's going on in town, and they feel really welcome.
All right, that's something for everybody to think of. Thank you very much. Now, Michelle and Ashley, do you think that there are people who just simply shouldn't ever think about this, shouldn't think about living alone?
Well, this is Michelle. I think going back to the numbers, run the numbers, if you're going to be just barely scraping getting into the home and not able to save, have a cushion and save for retirement, then no, you should not live alone, and it's perfectly okay. I also get concerned, I think one caller talked about as we age, and just be very careful, lots of folks, not just women, men as well, as they get older and they have health issues, they want to cling to their home. They, you know, you can't drag them out there. You know, that was a tragic story of the 91-year-old woman who shot her son because he wanted to move her into an assisted living facility. There is a point where if you can't live alone, it helps your caregivers if you say, it's okay, I know I can't live alone anymore, come live with me, or I need to move somewhere else. I think we need to have that conversation, and we need to be candid about it. Aging in place is the best thing to do. It's for everyone, but when it can't help happen, we have to be open to living somewhere else and not being alone.
Kathleen, what do you think? Is there some, I mean, I beg your pardon, Ashley,
sure, go ahead.
The idea of the idea that living alone could be, I don't know, very tough for some kinds of people. That how do you know whether you're that person or not?
Certainly, one thing you want to look at if you're thinking maybe you want to live alone is, you know, your mobility. Surely is a concern. Obviously, these studies that show people who live alone are lonelier tend to skew toward showing that people who end up less mobile and end up getting out of their home more often and being alone more often
tend to be lonelier. So that's, you know, that's certainly a concern. And also the other thing I guess I would look at is, you know, how do you spend your alone time? You know, does it put you in a good mood to be alone? Does it put you, you know, in a good headspace to have time of your own, and to have, you know, free time that's just yours to spend in your own company. If you're someone who likes that, you know, maybe living alone is a good option. But if you're somebody who finds that to be, you know, just too much time with your own thoughts, too much privacy, too much quiet, maybe it's not the best option.
So what do? Talk to your neighbors, talk to your friends and find out, am I the right sort of person for this? Michelle, what do you think?
I think you have to be sure to build a community. I think one of the stats was also that people who live alone are, you know, maybe more active outside the home. And I think that that's the key. Whatever you are, to be engaged, because at some point you might need to build a community to help you, particularly as you age. I was always active in my community. I did this, you know, nonprofit group where you took your dog to a nursing home, and which was right up the street from my first home, and I would walk my dog up there and spend, you know, hours at the nursing home with my dog. And I'm, you know, training my children, and I tell them, I say, hey, there may be a point where I need to live with you, and you may leave this with me, and we're okay with that. We're having those conversations now. So wherever you are, whether you're living alone, roommates, have it, talk about it, build a community, because there is a point where you may need to live with someone, and you want to have someone ready, available, who's willing to take you in, or you are willing to take them in. I think this is, again, a conversation that we have to have. Everybody can't have their own place. And if we accept that, then we can build communities and build a network that we help each other when we are in need.
It's one of the interesting things that in all the course of this discussion, what we keep hearing is that people are in different places at different times in their lives, and they make different choices are right for them at those times in their lives.
That's right. And the key is that you have to be self-aware. You have to say, you have to be honest with yourself. Can I afford to live alone? If I can, great. If I can't, it's okay to share home or apartment with someone else. Just authentic to what you need.
Thank you very much, Michelle Singletary. She is a nationally syndicated personal finance columnist for The Washington Post. We appreciate you being here. Ashley Fetters, she is a staff writer for The Atlantic. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Linda. It's been a pleasure to be here.
You can continue this conversation and get On Point Podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, millions of adventurers raft the Grand Canyon. But what was it like the first time, 150 years ago, when no one knew what was in that canyon? I'm Linda Wertheimer. This is On Point.